It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Friday morning. Welcome to Squawk of the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. Strong jobs number, not only for October at 128, but revisions up as well. Dow futures bounce more than 100. We'll wait to see if ISM in an hour can also rebound. Europe is green in the meantime. 10-year yield just north of 1.7. Our roadmap begins with that big beat for jobs. Stock futures jump as October gains far surpass expectations. Investors now eye another key read on manufacturing in the next hour.
Plus, streaming wars, Apple launching its TV Plus platform today. It's the latest volley in the original content battle between media and tech giants.
And Pinterest plummeting pre-market. Company stock now losing nearly a third of its value since peaking in August. And the growth strategy for Starbucks. CEO Kevin Johnson will join us first on CNBC this hour. Let's get to the jobs number. October payrolls well above expectations at 128K, despite the GM strike. September and August, each with their own sharply upward revision. Unemployment goes down, goes up to 3.6. Wage growth 3% from a year ago. Jim, hard to find things to quibble about this month.
Look, I'm going to come back and say that you're going to have the beginning of cracks in manufacturing. I think there's still two economies. The two-thirds of the economy that is consumer is doing very well. The other third is not doing well. And we can, I don't know how long we can go with only two-thirds. I think pretty long. But when you, if they shut down the Boeing 737 MAX, you're going to see very different numbers. And I just think that these numbers don't have that yet. There are some places that are cutting back production. But the consumer's strong. I don't know why anyone would say, though, that the Fed is done. The Fed will cut again if the manufacturing numbers get much worse.
Even with job numbers that are quite strong?
Yes. Yes.
And even with an unemployment rate of 3.6?
Yes.
So you're in the camp that manufacturing is the economy. When you output of finished goods is...
Why? Look at the lines. The line by line of manufacturing. It's not all GM. I am perfectly willing to admit that the U.S. economy is a consumer economy that is doing well. I'm trying to find an industrial company other than Honeywell and maybe United Technologies that said good things so far this quarter.
That's a good assignment. I'm thinking back myself.
I can't find it.
I mean, we're not including things like Microsoft, hardware related
exactly,
tech.
Exactly, not those.
No, but
no. A company that exports.
GE had a decent quarter.
Oh, yeah, well, that's called NABAF. That's not as bad as feared. It's NABAF.
No, absolutely.
Jason Govert says that NABAF is a great term.
I had not heard that one, but thank you for sharing that.
GE was NABAF.
Right.
It was not as bad as feared, meaning that they're still making windmills.
Yep.
They're tilting at windmills there. Yep. Did you know that?
Yes.
They're tilting at windmills.
Yes, they may be. Don Quixote-esque, yes.
By the way, guys, we'll continue our conversation about jobs, but Fitbit is being acquired by Google. A $2.1 billion valuation, $7.35 a share in cash, expected to close in 2020.
I mean,
interesting comments here from James Park about how 12 years ago we set an audacious company vision to make the world healthier.
Right.
And Google is an ideal partner to advance our mission.
Well, look, that's good.
Thoughts. I mean, people have known this was potentially going to happen, but the price is still above where the market. I mean, it's a decent premium to the current price, so you're going to watch that stock, given the 735 in cash, move up a good deal. It's about IP, right? I mean, that's what this is about.
Yeah,
it's about their intellectual property portfolio, I would think.
But you know,
it's a $2 billion, and that's up significantly from where the stock was prior to the first reports of Google's interest.
Why couldn't they close this ahead of when they reported?
I don't know.
I think that the area of Google that people are, or Alphabet that people have been concerned about is, when are we going to see something healthcare? When? And the answer is, I think, is this is it. This is a competitor directly. This company, I would say, was made, some people would say, obsolete by the Apple Watch. So it's kind of interesting. Alphabet teams up with what some people think is a, not a, a primary, but maybe a second rate, I mean, second tier company. Mm-hmm. Fitbit. I used to have Park James on all the time. And then I decided, you know what, if you miss your quarter every single time, it begins to be, there's no draft choice when you tank.
We remember when this was a hot stock.
It was hot. It was at 27.
Yeah.
But David, I'm not kidding. I don't mean to be too negative on someone, but they did not care about what the street thought of them. They said, we're the healthcare company of the future. And there are lots of companies you get a discount if you Fitbit and insurance. So it's good. This is going to be Verily. Maybe this is the way.
It never came anywhere near its early highs after going public.
Well, because it was a giant short squeeze.
In the 40s.
It was a giant short squeeze the whole time. But this is good. James Park has been making some money for people. Congratulations. But I now need we now need to see Verily. We now need to see their healthcare moon, you know, the other bets, the moon shots.
And we should point out $2 billion for a company like
Google
is, what, about 3 days worth of cash flow?
I mean, it's like Beats for Apple. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a large amount of cash.
But it's for the people who follow, who watch our shows. Fitbit has been a stock I get called on, I don't know, every week on
there. Is that true?
Yeah, well, because it's five. They love $5-6 stocks. I mean, if Alphabet were to split 1,000 times, they'd love Alphabet.
It's still halted, by the way. So when it is, when it isn't, it will show itself.
Do you think there's any other bidders, David?
I have no idea. I have to tell you, I have not focused on this for one moment.
That's, wow. Okay, so, yeah, there you go.
There's other things that have been taking up my time.
I would have said, Jim, I'm going to do some work. I'm going to come back.
No, it's got to have another zero.
You got like a casual Friday mind going. Hey, my mind's on casual mode.
Nobody's going to go up against Google, really.
All right. That's what why couldn't you said that the first time?
Okay, there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
See you news.
Yes. It does give us a chance. You mentioned competition with Apple in the watch space. And Apple's a big story today because they are upping the ante in the streaming wars. TV Plus is now available, launching today in over 100 countries and territories. $4.99 a month, featuring that lineup of original shows, movies, and documentaries. Comes as Disney Plus gets set to debut in a couple of weeks. Netflix, The Irishman, with its $160 million budget. Up today.
Look for me in The Irishman.
What?
It's made of my block.
Really? Oh, that's
I did everything I could to try to sneak in. They did everything they could to try to
it's
not
like,
put
did
me
he
in.
Have a cameo?
I totally would have
been. Money on
I kept walking
Hoffa,
behind
during
it.
The Hoffa era.
Did they make you young?
Probably at this point, I went to Giants. Remember, they used under the first Giants stadium, right?
Apparently.
The one when the Giants were a good team?
The Meadowlands.
Right.
Yes. Before the Metropolitan Stadium.
Before
the,
they became a bad team.
Yes.
It was Hoffa karma. But no, I mean, yeah, it was made on my street, and I'm like going like this every time. They said, will you get out of here? Please stop it.
There's a good discussion on Squawk a few minutes ago with Matt Blank, formerly of Showtime, that Apple, unlike its rivals, is not trying to resuscitate a legacy content library that gives them a chance to try some new things.
Right.
Peace out this morning saying maybe they're going to put their toe in the water. Gives them a sense of what to buy maybe down the road.
Well, I don't know. When I talked to Tim, I asked Tim directly about it. That being Tim Cook, the CEO.
Correct.
And it was, I of course blundered right into it. I said, look, how would you like to buy? Maybe there's a studio you want to buy or something. He said, no, we're not a catalog company, Jim. We're not buying a catalog. We're going to develop our own programming.
And it's going to take a while, as it has for Netflix, as it has for Amazon,
but
they have done it. And certainly possible for Apple to do the same. And to the point Matt Blank was making that Carl mentioned, they're not defending a legacy business that is changing dramatically. So it's not like Disney where they obviously Mr. Iger has felt we have to go hard into direct to consumer or like Warner Media, which is now unveiled HBO Max a couple of days ago and is obviously defending against the increase of cord cutting that we talk so often about.
$14.99.
Yeah.
Millennials eat Spam. They can't afford that. They eat Velveeta as of yesterday.
John Stankey, of course, CEO of Warner Media, and I did speak about this on Wednesday morning from the back lot at Warner Brothers. The price certainly is a key contention, but Stankey also did talk about, in some ways, you can connect it to Apple, the connection between the content and other offerings from these companies. Take a listen.
As we go forward on this, people aren't going to just buy content for content's sake. They're going to buy content because it's associated with other products and services. Whether it's Amazon, who chooses to offer marketplace incentives to have video, or it's AT&T that chooses to put great value with pay TV or connectivity or broadband associated with it. Those are other reasons for people to come into the product as well.
And in many ways, you could say the same about what Apple's thinking. It's connected to their ecosystem, to their devices. They're not defending a legacy business. At the same time, as I pointed out, there's not a lot of there yet.
Right, but this not defending legacy business is the Apple thing. I mean, if you look at the credit card, it's all about not defending a legacy business. They love greenfield, and they have a longer-term view. I like what they're doing because they're trying to reinvent. They're not just trying to buy the Paramount. They're not trying to buy the Paramount studio, Jack Ryan. They're not doing that. By the way, David, David, one of the great things about stocks I've learned, and this is really playing out with Viacom, they stop at zero.
Man, you are just brutal.
Jack Ryan needs to get in there, and then that is the equivalent of it's not. I'm going to change it. It's now Venezuela, and it's not Viacom.
AT&T paid what $600 million for South Park? That was a Viacom
for 5 years.
Yeah, but nothing accrues to Viacom. It is like a chimney. It's a chimney. You put money in. Have you seen the stock?
I think new lows, multi-year lows.
It's got it. Bob Bakish can fix this. I'm telling you, when this deal combines,
it can't happen quickly enough for them.
It's going
to
be.
They can outperform the low synergy numbers, which seem to disturb people, not to mention the low free cash flow prognostications that were in
it's
the.
It's not doing that badly.
No.
Why doesn't it go higher? Will you do that thing you did with Discovery where you got it from 18? Will you go see Malone? Go see Malone and get that stock from 21 to 30. Would you do that for me?
Malone.
Remember when you did it for Discovery?
Yes, with
Zaslav.
Do it again.
Yeah,
okay.
Do it again.
I'll put the
you're
word the, out. I'm
you're
happy
the, he's
to talk
the only
about
person
that.
Who can save Viacom. I believe when that's in December, early December, when they combine, the stock goes to 30.
It's going to be
30.
There are just a lot of questions and concerns about that business, as you know.
Stock sells at 5x
earnings. Cutting about
how
much
steel milk?
Advertising. No, I know. About whether they can keep the NFL, how much it's going to cost them.
I asked Tim Cook about sports. I mean, you know, they could own the SEC. They could own, you know, you could amalgamate. I wonder
but they're not going to do it, right?
No, they're not.
No. Now, it's interesting because HBO Max, they said in their presentation, and Stanky made clear in our interview as well, will go years out. There will be live. So that's news and sports.
That's good. And meanwhile, Frank Pelota at CNN did a nice piece where he added the cost of subscribing to Apple, Disney Plus, HBO Max, Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, and CBS All Access, $71 a month for all of those. That's not including Peacock, he said.
I get that.
That's less than a traditional cable bill.
Yes. I have the Fios Skinny Bundle. It's $51. I get a lot of good stuff on that.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
I got a lot of them too. Hulu. What's on? I mean, I don't know. I guess my kids like the catalog on Hulu, right?
That's SNL for now.
Right,
for
and they're now. Watching. Yeah.
My wife watches
shows.
Hulu.
Really?
Yeah. When we come back after this commercial, I'll tell you some other things she wants. Oh shoot, we're on.
Say again.
Who cares? We all watch all this stuff.
No, but the question about price is a key one. All right, $71 may not, but you know you're paying for your broadband connection as well. That's $60 right there, or whatever the number may be, because you're no longer taking video with it.
Right.
It does add up.
It's their largest, other than their rent, it's the millennials' largest thing.
Sure. That's because they spend so many hours working on it and watching. By the way, Needham's Laura Martin today says if Netflix doesn't cut prices next year, they lose 10 million subs.
Wow.
Wow, that's a big number. There's this real belief that they're going to have to go to some sort of ad-supported number as well.
I just can't believe it, though.
They claim they're not going to, but she's, I think, amongst those who believe they're going to have lower price and have an ad-supported service. By the way, Peacock, of course, owned by NBC, which will roll out, is going to be an ad-supported
service. Okay, so your Apple bill just keeps going higher and higher and higher. And remember, they send that to you at 3:20 a.m. I mean, honestly, your Apple bill is going to... Think about all your Apple Care, Apple Backup, Apple Credit Card. I'm like Apple, Apple, Apple. And that adds up. That's why there's been some talk about Apple offering a bundle when you buy, which would be really good. I mean, I pay Apple a ton. I pay Comcast, Fios, the one down there that you like so much, the Charter thing. What is that thing? Altice, I pay them.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Altice, yes. That's another cable
Altice.
Company in the metropolitan area.
They Altice, Matisse,
the cable
Altice.
Yes.
I pay Picasso, I pay Matisse, I pay Altice.
And you pay a wireless bill, too. Who
do
you pay that to?
Mine was $1,500 last month.
$1,500? Yeah. How many wireless bills do you pay?
I got a family plan that's like the, like the Waltons.
Wow.
I know. I got to look at how that happened.
Fitbit is open for trade. Again, the... $2.1 billion. What did we say? $735
all
yes,
cash. Yeah,
a share.
We'll close fairly quickly. One would expect 2020 is all they're saying at this point. They're not giving us any.
Do you think it reflects badly on Alphabet?
2020 reflects badly. Why? What would you say?
This is all they could come up with.
You don't think they're done? This is not. They're not done in this space.
I think that my hope is that when you go over the arc of that call of the Alphabet call, you get to the other bet section. And it seems like they just lose a billion every. I mean, it's this may be the way. A lot of people in the healthcare business over there are not that happy. There's two different healthcare units. They haven't melded them. Maybe Park stays with it. How about that?
That's a good question. I don't. Is it? I don't know. Yeah.
How about that? Wouldn't that be something?
Say.
Maybe he runs it. He's a very efficient guy. Humorless. Maybe the most humorless person I've ever interviewed. What's the matter? It's humorless. It's all right.
I really don't like humorless people.
It's all right.
No offense to them.
You know,
hope they put
not everybody can be Elon. You want Elon Musk?
You got to have a little funny. Just a little.
No, Park's never. He's just a serious guy. James Park, 28 million active users. This is when you talk. Remember what Tim Cook says. My legacy will be healthcare. And the numbers for when you talk to watch companies, their businesses are typically down 50% because of Apple. So this is Alphabet's first going up against Tim Cook.
He does say he couldn't be more excited for what lies ahead. It does make it sound like his quote
anything.
That he's going to stay at the
excited.
Company some period of time, but we don't know the answer.
He's never excited about anything.
By the way, went public at 20, so you're looking at a discount of more than 60% from.
In a suboptimal situation.
When we come back, we'll talk about Starbucks today, outperforming the S&P so far this year, up more than 30%. CEO Kevin Johnson will tell us how the company's digital strategy is sparking sales growth in the U.S. and China after their earnings earlier in the week. Take another look at the pre-market. The jobs number, if you missed it, 128K, well above the estimates of 90K, and revisions were good. Futures reflecting that. We're back in a moment. What a morning in the bond pits, the jobs number and ISM on the way. Let's get to Rick Santelli. Hey, Rick.
Yes, it's going to be so fascinating, Carl, because obviously that jobs number, even GM distorted, was really solid. A couple of things we didn't even hit on. There was a subtle but very important positive revision to year-over-year earnings. Last month we thought they were 2.9. They moved to 3%. Now, even that 1/10, psychologically, that's a positive. 95,000 jobs over the last couple months revised to the upside. How did it all turn out? Well, let's look at some one-week chart, shall we? Look at a two-year note yield. And on the right side, of course, is today. Look at that volatility. We're not regaining all the yield increase from the positive number, but most of it. And Carl's right. The ISM is going to be the second punch here, and we'll have to see if it's a good one or a bad one. Look at 1 week of tens. Up one on the day, down 10 on the week. Twos are down 7 on the week. There's some of your flattening. And what's interesting, look at tens to twos for 1 week. So basically, we're trading a quarter of the range-like float. You know, 20, 15, we're bouncing back and forth. Virtually, it was, two or three when the Fed met at its last meeting prior to this. The point is, yesterday and the day before, we were flattening with yields moving down, which means prices moving up. We'll call that a bull flattener. But today, it's the exact opposite, and we're flattening on the bear camp as rates move higher and face value is moving lower. But at the end result, the Fed most likely didn't expect this number, and if ISM doesn't go poorly, I would see a steepening as long maturity yields should move higher more aggressively. Look at 1 week of boons. You know, the interesting thing about boons is that we spent some time right around the minus high 30s. What a huge difference from their all-time low yield close at minus 71. Some give back there, but today is the first official day, of course, of Christine Lagarde, and things are going to be changing. Finally, 1 week of the dollar index. October was unkind to the dollar index. It is trying to take a stand here, although the positive numbers are small. Carl, Jim, David, back to you.
All right, Rick, we'll see you in 40 minutes for ISM. We will get Cramer's Mad Dash, countdown to the opening bell. Lots to talk about with Starbucks' Kevin Johnson in a first on CNBC interview in just a few moments. Futures look good on this Friday. Don't go anywhere. All right, Fitbit getting bought by Google this morning. Jim mentions the consumer interest in that name. There's a look at a one-week chart, 67% gain. Well, opening bell is next, and our interview with Starbucks' Kevin Johnson, just minutes away.
All right, we got 2 minutes or so before we get to an opening bell. Last trading session of the week, by the way, if you'd like to keep track of the days of the week. And this is the last mad dash. What do we got?
Well, I said the other day that Grubhub has been the biggest disaster in the quarter. Well, Arista Networks, okay, is going to rival that, A-N-E-T. They're talking directly about a major pause in spending by a cloud titan. J.P. Morgan says it's Facebook. Now, the confusing thing here is that this is the only company that has seen a major pause in cloud spending. We didn't see it in Intel. We didn't see it. If you go back over and I said AMD would go up because Lisa Su's doing so well, they didn't see it.
Sometimes I think people think, what do they do? What does Arista Networks do?
They make
do?
The boxes, white boxes inside a data center. So.
Okay, thank you.
And what happens here is that this call was a rebellion call.
Okay.
It was a call where people were saying, listen, I don't see it. What are you?
So we're not seeing a slowdown in spending from some of the other cloud providers.
But the fact is, look, she's seeing a slowdown. She's the biggest. She's very good. I'm not trying to minimize that they're like, you know, that they're a bad company. They're a great company, and they've been one of the great, great, great performers. But without a doubt, this conference call made people feel that something is very wrong.
Is it because it be an early sign? Could it be? Would they in some way see the demand?
Jayshree Ullal was
slowing prior to other providers.
Jayshree Ullal, who used to be at Cisco, I think she would say that. That look out for 2020 spending. I don't want to put words in her mouth because she's done such a fabulous job. But this was a very jarring call. Kind of broke down in the middle, too, and people were like saying, what the heck? This was a what the heck call.
Let's get the opening bell here. S&P 500 and the CNBC Real-Time Exchange and the big board. It's the March of Dimes, highlighting prematurity infant awareness month at the NASDAQ. Bangu Network Group, a property technology company in China. Jim, you mentioned some of the blow-ups of the week. Wayfair's, the Grubhub's, Pinterest, we didn't get to in the first half hour.
Pinterest was such... Jane Penner, the IR, the person who used to work with me, they're very... I do not take this wrong. They are a very sweet company. And what I mean is that they are doing... They care a lot about the pinners. They've done a couple of reorganizations to make the site better. It has made it so it's really hard to figure out how well it's doing. They've never played the game. Todd Morgenfeld and Ben Silberman told me when I went out there to see them, we're not going to do you, Pod Jim. We are not going to underpromise and then overdeliver. That's not our style. Well, it's not. And the analysts, I think, keep thinking, you know what? It's all, don't worry, they've got something under the vest. They got a whole card that's good. No, they did what they said they were going to do, which is continue to work to make the site better. And the conclusion of the analysts is that they're out, that they're done. Other than international, everybody who's a pinner is a pinner.
So what happened? Our monthly average users was below.
It just wasn't up that much.
Average revenue per user.
Not great.
Was below estimates.
Below estimates, but not below. So that's what's important.
Right,
see,
below
people have to understand that there are two kinds of below. There's below estimates, and then there's below what you say.
Right.
And they did what they were going to say, and they are very, I shouldn't have said sweet. They're very earnest. And
well, then, Jim, you're not exactly explaining why this company is losing almost a quarter of its market value.
Well, because people expected it. You bought it for the growth, not for EBITDA positive adjusted. You bought it for growth. But people kind of felt, you know what, they can just put the pedal down. We don't really care about how much money they make. We want incredible growth. And it turned out that they were, a prudent company that did the number that they said they did. But people wanted more than that. And this is what happens when you make expectations that are realistic and you do that as opposed to blowing them
away. This is yet another of the IPO class of 2019.
It's going to be known as the worst.
That is so far now below its opening price.
Well, and some of the price target cuts on Wayfair today. Barron goes from 100 to 65.
Wayfair was always one of those companies. There's an example where they said, listen, we're going to grow really, really fast, but Amazon doesn't like them.
That's exactly right.
Amazon doesn't like them.
Jim Chanos, who famously called for a short on Grub, tells the FT today that October is one of his best months ever after PG&E and Grub.
Well, good for him because he does a lot of work. And Grub was one of these companies that kept telling you we're an ecosystem. You know, this ecosystem is a term. There are not many companies that are in a real ecosystem. There are a lot of what I would call pretender poser ecosystems. Grubhub turned out to be a poser. David, I'm over here talking. Grub turned out to be a poser ecosystem.
Yes.
Yes.
So it was a poser ecosystem, and it has promiscuous customers.
Yeah, that was really
I'm never going to get past that one.
That call was the decision.
Who's writing these press releases?
The comms department has some experience.
Are you kidding me?
That was a call from hell, and the release was from hell, and they should go to where that was bad.
But as you can see here, breadth looks really good. We're above 30-50, Jim. A lot of people have talked about that number as being a key reflection of where we are on trade and earnings.
Well, look, we've had a couple quarters. I don't think people are like, Apple's a gigantic, Facebook's a gigantic company. That Facebook conference call was so good. And it basically said, listen, we are doing much better than you think. Now, of course, Zuckerberg was completely consumed by the First Amendment and political ads. I know that this is going to sound like I am a heartless person, that I'm just a dollar sign represented by a man, but Facebook has to start talking about how good its business is and talk less about whether they should take ads that say that President Trump is really, I don't know, I don't want to go there, but there is just a disconnect between what the company's saying and what the company's doing. The company's doing much better than what it's saying. It's really mired in the dialogue of, well, should we run these kinds of ads?
Wanted to hit Alibaba, which we haven't.
Yeah, what
don't
the hell,
talk
David?
About it. Excuse me.
I'm sorry. I was paying attention to you, as opposed to you.
Well, when you were talking about Grubhub, I was trying to access Alibaba information.
Alibaba was down 2. Then it was up 3.
Yes.
Then it was down 4.
The call,
now it's up 2.
The call apparently went well. It was this morning, and I talked to a couple of people or texted with a couple of people who were on it.
Yeah.
At least their impression is strong. Mm-hmm. Strong numbers.
Okay.
You know, you got 37% revenue growth in the core marketplace. It is core commerce revenue up 40% year over year. It's still growing very quickly. Adjusted EBITDA 39%. Total revenue, again, up 40%. 693 million annual active customers. And so it is responding positively. And apparently on the call, they did a fairly good job in terms of at least some dealing with some of the key questions. That's what we can tell you right now.
Well,
it continues to move at a very rapid pace, obviously. We followed it, the growth of the Chinese consumer. Are they starting to weaken has been a key question. This has been in some ways a proxy for the trade fight to a certain extent.
Yeah, yes,
no signs, at least, of weakening amongst their customer base at this point.
Estee Lauder, yesterday, China was a standout, not Hong Kong because of the protests. China was very, very strong. A lot of the headlines were dead wrong about Estee Lauder. Actually, it was a decent quarter. They did raise. But a lot of our companies are selling a lot on T-Mobile and then on T-Mall.
T-Mall,
a lot of money being spent on
T-Mall.
Yeah,
that's the branded platform. Taobao is one of the smaller merchants.
It's very important that the consumer in China is strong, the industrial is not. The consumer in the United States is strong, the industrial is not, because the industrial sections are at war with each other.
But China is much more of an industrial manufacturing-led economy, right?
They
so one would expect the consumer
numbers,
would start to weaken.
If they had a labor department, I think you'd see that their numbers are worse than ours.
Well, the Caixin PMI did come in 51.7, best since February of 17.
I don't trust that.
No one trusts that number.
No.
That's true. No one does.
No. I had Columbia Sportswear on last night. They have a big China business, and they've been saying, look, they had to raise. China's bad for them. China's down for them. So there's expensive luxury good, but then China good luxury good for Estee Lauder. It's a very hard read.
You want to bring in Kevin?
Oh, my. You know what? We should go to Kevin Johnson.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay. Ooh. Cold brew, which is just incredible for the afternoon day part, by the way, and China, the two big growth drivers for Starbucks. And joining us now, maybe just came back from Japan, Starbucks CEO Kevin Johnson. Kevin, great to see you.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We are good, and I think that you're doing well. I was surprised you happened to report on a day where the market was bad. I thought your stock should have been up 3. Let's talk about, we were just talking about Alibaba. which we know you have a great relationship, Kevin. China looks like they are far more developed digitally than America, and you have been a star. You are a technology genius from the old days. Talk about how great China was, because a year ago, China, people were doubting you.
Well, you know, we had a very solid quarter, and it really capped off a transformative year for Starbucks. I think we're well positioned. Certainly, China was a big part of that, Jim. And, you know, you think about the digital savvy of the Chinese consumer. You know, they adopt and they embrace technology at a very rapid rate. Our China digital partnership with Alibaba really unlocked a wide range of new opportunities for us. We launched Starbucks Delivers in China, our mobile order for pickup. You know, just those two alone were 10% of our sales mix in China. And, you know, we posted a 5% comp with 2% growth in traffic. So the digital strategy in China is working. 10 million active rewards members, 45% growth in those rewards members. So really a strong performance in China.
Now, in the United States, even not that long ago, the investment community, Kevin, really felt that you couldn't get United States going, talking about like a 4% number. Talk about the two-year comp, which is what really matters, and how it accelerated and why it accelerated in the United States.
Yeah, well, you know, we posted a 6% comp with 3% growth in traffic this quarter. When you look at the two-year comp, it accelerated to 10%. So, you know, many were skeptical that we posted a strong 4% comp a year ago, but then we posted a 6 on top of that. Now, the growth at scale agenda we're executing against really is all about focusing on the right things and then executing with discipline. In the U.S., it's all been about elevating the customer experience in our stores, driving beverage innovation, and expanding digital customer relationships. And in all three of those dimensions, you know, we've executed with discipline. Beverage innovation. You know, we now have Nitro in all of our stores in the U.S. Our innovation on the cold beverage platforms, especially things like cold brew. You know, we had pumpkin cream cold brew, Nitro, but also our iced macchiato. You know, our cloud macchiato beverage platform, refreshers, shaken teas. So, you know, we've really focused on that beverage innovation that has helped us, and we grew an everyday part in the U.S.
Kevin, on the call, you chose to take a bit of time to focus investors on your strategy when it comes to artificial intelligence, something we talk about a lot here, of course, the growth of AI. Give people a sense here in terms of how you see it helping your business, potentially, eventually, I would assume as well, contributing to margin expansion.
Yeah, well, you know, clearly we've been focused on the digital flywheel and how that customer connection is so important. But over this last year, we've really spun up our focus on artificial intelligence around an initiative that we call Deep Brew. And Deep Brew started really by using artificial intelligence for the personalized offers that we make on our mobile app. But now we're using Deep Brew in a wider range of scenarios. For example, Deep Brew is now doing artificial intelligence to really predict how many store partners we ought to have by day part in every one of our stores. By doing that, it is helping us unlock growth because we're staffed to meet customer demand. Deep Brew is now forecasting inventory replenishment by store. And that is helping partners ensure they have all the items they need to serve customers, and they don't have to spend their time doing that inventory and placing those orders. So Deep Brew is actually freeing up partner time so that they can spend more of that time focused on the customer. Basically, Deep Brew is automating those administrative tasks, freeing up our partners to spend more time with customers, and that has led to an all-time high in customer connections. Now, when customer connection scores are at an all-time high, that's growing our traffic. So Deep Brew really is at the center of helping our partners better serve customers, and it is a key fuel for our growth looking forward.
Hey, Kevin, it's Carl. In QSR, breakfast is getting so much attention, either adding to the menu at McDonald's or Wendy's, what have you. I wonder, is there pressure internally to expand food, at least in the morning?
Well, you know, for us, we're a beverage-first company. I mean, we differentiate on the fact that our Starbucks partners handcraft each and every beverage personally for our customers, and then we attach food. And, you know, we saw good growth in all day parts and especially in our morning day part. So I think the beverage platform is helping, but part of what's helping in the morning day part is we're able to attach our breakfast sandwiches, the sous vide egg bites, and a wide range of food items that resonate with our customers. So, you know, food plays an important role as an attach to the beverage, and we're seeing good performance in that morning day part.
In a couple of days, Kevin, actually 10, it's Veterans Day. I think that your company is the one that's maybe the most committed to hiring vets. There are also, I think, there's a labor shortage in this country. Could you talk about how you can find enough people to staff Starbucks and what you've done to hire people who've come back from the wars?
Well, you know, our focus on veterans and military spouses has been something we've been doing for several years. You know, we set a goal for ourselves to hire 25,000 veterans and military spouses. We surpassed that goal 3 years ahead of schedule. And we now are on a run rate. We hire 5,000 veterans and military spouses every year. And they are phenomenal Starbucks partners, and we're very proud to be associated with our veterans and helping support them, you know, as they come back from oftentimes multiple tours of duty. So that's been an important part of it. And they are fantastic partners, and they make us a better company.
I want to talk for a moment about something that Mark Benioff has taught us, which is that business is the greatest platform for change. Your company uniquely has been an ambassador to the United States. What's it like being for the United States? What's it like being an ambassador for the United States to China right now?
You know, Jim, well, we just surpassed 4,100 stores in China. We have 55,000 Starbucks partners who proudly wear the green apron in China. We've been in China for 20 years now. And, you know, for us, it's all been about being in that market, entering that market with respect for the Chinese culture, and doing the right things to, you know, beyond the pursuit of profit. For example, we introduced a healthcare benefit for our partners in China to take care of their aging parents. And that's a one-of-a-kind insurance program that we put together in partnership in China. You know, the whole foundation of Starbucks is built on the fact that we believe that the pursuit of profit is not in conflict with the pursuit of doing good. And, you know, in many ways, our purpose and our reason for being goes far beyond the pursuit of profit. So when we're in China, every one of those stores is a part of a community. And we do work to service that community and be a part of that community, take care of our partners, and show up in a way that really focuses on doing good in every community that we are a part of.
Yeah, Kevin, the reason why I'm going down this path is business is under assault in our country. I've never seen anything like it in my lifetime. And the companies like you are doing things that make me feel that business being under assault is a huge mistake, given the fact that, again, it's a great platform for change. I happened to be in Mexico recently, and, you know, I saw orange aprons, and I said, maybe they're wearing the wrong color. That's not true, right?
Well, that's not true. Yeah, I know you shared a great photograph of you visiting one of our stores in Mexico. And in the month of October, we have a great licensed partner, Alsea, who runs our Starbucks stores throughout Latin America. And Alberto Torrado and his team do a fantastic thing in the month of October. They have a very special cause that they orient to. So, you know, every peso that's spent at Starbucks and their other brands that they run, they donate money to help feed the hungry and take care of children, take care of their communities. And so they put on an orange apron to help amplify the fact that they are focused on serving their communities and contributing money to those communities and the people in need. And so we're proud to be, to be a part of what we do in Mexico and in every community around the world.
Kevin, you know, hopping onto Jim's question about China and being an ambassador for the U.S. in a way, and we do see pictures in Hong Kong, and we know Hong Kong's a mess, but we see pictures of broken glass at Starbucks storefronts. How should investors view that?
Well, look, obviously we monitor that closely. And, I just say that my priority is focusing on the safety and security of our partners. And, you know, certainly, you know, we're in 81 markets around the world, and, you know, we deal with geopolitical issues all the time. But my focus and my priority is really focusing on the safety and security of our partners.
Kevin, one last question. I know we got to go. I'm curious to know what you're seeing about the delivery business. There was a debacle this week where Grubhub was saying this business is maybe, I could argue, say, isn't a business. The fact that their profit margins are so thin, is that a win for Starbucks?
Well, I look at the delivery business. China is a very different market than the U.S. You know, in China, we saw 7% of our total sales volume came from delivery. And in the U.S., it's far less than 1%. And part of that, I think, is there's a very different cost structure in China than there is in the U.S. And, you know, I think that delivery will evolve in the U.S. But right now, I think the, you know, unless you have a very high ticket, the delivery costs, you know, are prohibitive to the consumer. And so, you know, people are having to invest. Either merchants are going to have to accept lower margins, or delivery companies are going to have to figure out a different business model that enables that price to be a lower price to the consumer. You know, for us, you know, we're pleased with our partnership with Uber Eats, but it's very early days in the U.S., whereas I see, you know, delivery is much more mature in China and is embraced, you know, by the Chinese consumer much more than it is here in the United States.
Kevin, it's really great to talk to you. That's Kevin Johnson, CEO of Starbucks. Good to see you, sir. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
When we come back this morning, Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times columnist Jim Stewart will get his take on Apple TV Plus, on the streaming wars at large. A record high for the S&P, 3055, and the first record high for the NASDAQ since July. Don't go anywhere. ...20-year chart of Apple. You got to measure the gains in the thousands of percent, just burying the S&P over that time period. 251, new all-time high today, and it's Tim Cook's birthday.
Happy birthday, Tim.
We're back in a minute. Jim, stop trading.
First, I didn't know my wife, Lisa, has her same birthday as Tim. So happy birthday, Lisa. Qorvo, Q-R-V-O. That is giving us hope for 5G. It's up 14. It was a fantastic conference call. Made me feel really terrific about tech. And it's a, you know, people who are down and feeling low, read the Qorvo conference call, because, boy, we're not left out by 5G. We're a leader. We're a leader, David.
Got it. I was singing the Simon and Garfunkel song in my head, with the "when you're down and feeling low," you had me there.
Dave, no man's an island.
Oh. What's
so anyways,
tonight?
It's really good. And I'm going to do my game plan tonight. And I'm excited by Qorvo because I know that China, you know, unveiled its 5G. Dom Chu doing great stuff today. And to me, we're part of it. So let's not forget, we know what we're doing.
Jim, we'll see you tonight. Important show, 6 p.m.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.